Woo! I know options are confusing, folks. It takes a few times to go through these presentations, read the materials, to actually have them sink in. And even then, they're going to trick you up left and right. But our last presentation is not as tricky. We're going to discuss some of the topics that are associated with options, and they're pretty straightforward, to be truthful. And the first is employee stock options. Now, these are options that are granted to an employee by a company, giving the employee the right to buy shares of stock in the company at a fixed price for a fixed time. They're always call options because, in other words, you're hoping that the company does well and that you can buy the shares at a great price after the stock has zoomed up. Hence, maybe now you understand the joke at the beginning, reprice my options so that they're worth something. Because the stock price didn't respond the way we thought it would, and I have an option to buy at $10, and the stock is selling at $7, so reprice my option at $2, huh? No, she can't do that. She can do a few other things, but she doesn't have the power to do that. Usually, they have significant differences from normal call options. You can't sell them to somebody else. They expire in many years, usually 10 years, 7, 10 years you have to wait. And they have a vesting period, 3 to 7 years. So they expire in many years, and you have to wait a certain number of years. If you leave the company before the vesting period is over, well, you lose your stock options. And so during the tech boom of the late 1990s and for the past few decades, ESOs were used extensively in high-tech companies to attract employees because they can't pay them as much as they could if they were established companies. So the stock options are a way there to sweeten the deal. You know, if this company really does well, it's not making any money now, it's losing money, and maybe you'll never make any money, and maybe the stock will never respond. But if it does respond and we do hit the big time, you're going to be fabulously wealthy. And some people did hit the big time, and a lot didn't. During the 2000 to 2002 bear market, as the internet was imploding, ESOs, employee stock options, were the subject of much controversy. And there's still some fallout and publicity as the companies in this SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the accounting board, I forget what it's called, that sets up the accounting standards for companies, continue to wrangle over how and if they should be used. For many years, companies could give ESOs to their employees and did not have to pay anything. They did not expense the employee stock options. So they did not reduce the company's earnings. But still, they're giving you something, right? But right now it's not worth anything, but someday it might, and it will dilute the number of shares as your options become worthwhile. However, now, according to the Financial Accounting Standards Board, the FASB, the employee stock options must be expensed. Unfortunately, how do you come up with a price for something that is currently worthless? That kind of doesn't make any sense to me. To make matters worse, while some people became fabulously wealthy through ESOs during the internet mania, one example was John Moores of Padres and Peregrine Software fame. He became fabulously wealthy, and then Peregrine went and down the porcelain oasis. Many other people were soaked with crippling tax burdens on worthless pieces of paper when their companies collapsed. Wait a minute, how can that be? How could you be hit on taxes if you never realize the gain? The alternative minimum tax does not care if you sell the exercised options, only that you exercise them, you still owe tax on the paper gain, even if they were never able to realize that paper gain. It's Alice in Wonderland in our tax code once again. So some people were hit with crippling tax burdens and they just never made it to the big time, where other people made it to the big time, and of course they had to pay taxes on that. Wait a minute. Did you ask, how do you come up with a price for something that is currently worthless? Yes, this is correct. Since many ESOs are out of the money, often by a large amount, or cannot be exercised for a long time, or both, how does the company put a price on it? Well, the financial world currently has a system called the Black Scholes, Fisher Black, but he passed away. Myron Scholes is the surviving member of the team. Option pricing model. It may sound impressive, but it is really very silly in my humble opinion. However, I'm not awarding the Nobel Prizes for economics, and Myron Scholes won it, and then proceeded to partner with John Merriweather. Remember him from chapter one, the bond trader who played liar's poker before liar's poker was being played with his boss for $1 million and then $10 million? They partnered together with another man named Robert Merton, yes, who also won the Nobel Prize, to create long-term capital management. And they were considered the folks who actually had done it. They had come up with a way to accurately predict stock prices in the short term until they didn't. And then they made a big boo-boo. We made a little problem. They almost brought down the global financial system in 1998. And folks, it reads, and there's a book called When Genius Fails. It's a really good book. Read it. And then there's a Nova special, PBS Nova special about the $1 trillion bet. And it's like a prequel. It's exactly like a prequel to the global financial crisis that happened in 2008. Kind of like The Hobbit to The Lord of the Rings. So I'm not a big fan of the Black-Scholes option pricing model, but hey, who am I? What can I say? I'm not buying and selling options, so they don't care about me. So here's the Black-Scholes option pricing model this is just a silly example. Not a silly example, but it's a theoretical example. It's not a real one. The stock is currently selling for $7.50. The ESO, the employee stock option, has an exercise price of $10, so it's currently out of the money. Plus, the options can't be exercised for 3 years, and the model might say that they're worth $2.50. And what? You can't sell them, you can't exercise them for 3 years, they're out of the money. How are they worth $2.50? Plus, the stock price might never go over $10. But if you do exercise them and the stock price then plummets afterwards, and if you're unfortunate enough to be affected by the AMT, you might have to pay taxes on the paper gain that you were never able to realize. But don't let me dissuade you from accepting stock options from a company that you're sure is going to hit the big time, because then you can go out and buy yourself a yacht and you don't have to listen to me anymore. Now, there are other options, as we said at the beginning of our chapter together on options. There are stock index options. So instead of buying an option or selling an option on a particular stock, you can have a put or call option written or bought on the Standard & Poor's 500. So it allows an investor to purchase or sell an option that responds to the stock market as a whole, or others as dozens of those indices representative. And you can use this as insurance, right? If you have a large portfolio of stocks and you feel that the stock market's going to fall down, instead of selling your stocks, you can buy a put option on the stock index. And so if your portfolio falls, your stock index option will go up. But whether speculating or hedging, dear students, it is still risky and it is still expensive. Slide 49. There are other types of options. Interest rate options. You can buy and sell options that are written on fixed income securities. In other words, bonds. You're sort of speculating which way interest rates are going to go. Currency options that you can use for your currencies, the dollar or other currencies, which can be an important tool for foreign investors and multinational corporations who must periodically convert U.S. dollars to and from other currencies. We'll discuss this in more detail in our next presentation, next chapter. And then these things, which I've never figured out, and I've never really asked, I guess I should ask, but LEAPS, long-term equity anticipation securities. You know, this is one of those acronyms. They came up with the acronym first, and then they decided what it's going to mean. And these are options that go past a year. And I don't know how they get away with it, because any kind of security that goes past a year has to be registered with the SEC, as opposed to anything that's 3-6 months, like our, remember, the Treasury bills and the corporate paper. So I don't know how they get away with it. And I, as I said, I've never asked. So if you are so inclined, it's just one of the things I think, how do they do that? But they do. So you can buy an option that will last for 2.5-3 years if you wanted to. They're going to cost a lot more, right, because there's a whole lot more time value to the option. But it's a way to extend your time horizon with an option. And then warrants. Now, warrants are, they're kind of like a call option, right? They're a long-lived option that gives the holder the right to buy stock in a company at a price specified on the warrant. Now, warrants are usually issued by the same company that issues the underlying stock. We can think of it like a sweetener, equity kicker. Remember we discussed that term back in the chapter on hybrid securities? Hey, you're going to buy our bonds, we'll give you some warrants. You're going to buy a new issue of our stocks, we'll give you some warrants as a sweetener to the deal. Or maybe you're going to work for us, we'll give you some warrants, kind of like ESOs. And warrants are a little different than options in that each contract and an option represents 100 shares of stock. No, each warrant represents the right to buy one share of stock. And they're usually call options, but I've seen that there are some put warrants. I've never understood why you'd want a put warrant, but they're there. But the idea is that we are bullish on the stock, and so we buy the stock, or maybe we buy the bonds, and they give us some warrants, and then the warrants can be sold, like any security. They're a security, so they can be bought and sold in the open markets. But there are not that many of them. But it's just something to know. And if you take the Series 7, they're going to ask you what a warrant is, so you have to know that. So what are our final comments on options? Whew, I know, this is a lot, folks. And it's the end of the semester, and you're tired, and I told you don't have to worry about it, so don't worry about it. But if you're so inclined, go back over and watch these and listen to these several times. But the final comment is, don't do it. Stay away from options. It's gambling, pure and simple. The possibilities are endless, and so are the losses and commissions. But wait a minute. Don't take my word for it. Let's take a look at what the folks who want to teach you how to trade options have to say. So on the website and in Canvas are links to places, and there are dozens of these places, folks. Only $4,995 for a 4-day course, and you will be making more money than you ever thought you could make. And don't worry about burning that credit card, folks. No, because you're going to pay off that credit card and all your other credit cards within weeks, and just, you are going to be so fabulously filthy rich. You think I can make a lot of money if I didn't have any FX? Yeah. So stay away from options. And that's our presentation on options, because on our next chapter, it's going to get worse. If you thought options were bad, wait till you see how much money you can lose with futures contracts in our next chapter. But the cool thing about futures contracts is they actually do serve a purpose for our economy, but just not for us. Unless we work for a multinational corporation that's buying and selling foodstuffs or energy products or commodities, things that you and I usually, none of us buy oil. We buy gasoline, but we don't buy crude oil. We don't buy hundreds of thousands of bushels of corn or wheat or whatever. But people do, and people produce those. And that's what futures are all about. So futures actually have an important role in our economy. But again, not for us, unless we want to speculate and possibly make a ton of money or lose a ton of money. So if I've already scared you enough that you don't even want to know about futures, you can skip the chapter and just look at the questions on the exam. But really, it's a quick chapter, and it's actually pretty interesting. Most people respond when we're in the face-to-face class. Most people go, oh, that's how that works. Okay, I understand. Cool. So we'll see you in our next chapter, futures contracts. And again, it's pretty quick, so stick with us. We are so proud of you. Dear students, thank you so much. Think of how much you have learned. You are so awesome. You are official investment gurus. I'm so proud of you.